You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Every time you see the argument for gender neutrality or completely sex-blind treatment of men and women, you wind up seeing women get the short end of the stick.
The Supreme Court created themselves the National Abortion Control Board because they control abortion law, they control abortion doctrine, they control abortion policies.
Why have we neglected hundreds and hundreds of years of heritage in our churches? Why do we sing garbage? Instead, we have paint-by-numbers pictures of Jesus playing wiffle ball with the kids.
If the church is going to survive where it will survive, because it will survive, it will do so on the forgiveness of sins.
This is Stan in Carson City, Nevada, and I just love listening to Issues Etc. on vacuuming floodwaters out of the game room in my home.
It was a major feature, a promise that then-candidate Donald Trump made. Were he to be elected, he would solve the problem of kind of the slow leak of terrorism into the country, some perceived, by establishing a travel ban on immigration from certain countries, countries that were known to be hotspots for terrorism and training in terrorism. Now, he tried to carry that out. One judge stepped in the way. He loosened things up a little bit. And then another judge has stepped in the way with some interesting reasoning on why the travel ban ought to be suspended, why the travel ban might be illegal. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this St. Patrick's Day, Friday the 17th of March. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Molly Hemingway is going to join us to talk about a federal judge's ruling against President Trump's latest travel ban a little bit later. Part 8 of our series on Lutheran identity. We'll talk with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of the book Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity, about two features, simultaneously saint and sinner and congregational singing. Dr. Ken Sherb joins us for part 56 of our series on Martin Luther and the Reformation. We'll be talking about the golden rule right there in Matthew chapter 7, right there in the Sermon on the Mount. Then, since it's Friday, we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We've got four soundbites to play for you. We will play them, you listen, and then you vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943, or sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet @issuesetc, or voting at our Facebook fan page, which you can do so in advance, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about a federal judge's ruling against President Trump's travel ban, Molly Hemingway, senior editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled Five Problems with the Hawaii Judge Halting Trump's Travel Ban. Molly, welcome back.
It's great to be here with you.
What's the biggest problem with the judge's recent ruling?
There are a couple really big problems, but one of them is that the judge made his ruling based on his perception of the feelings of the president and his advisors. So he admits throughout his ruling, which imposes a temporary ban on the temporary ban, that he doesn't have a problem with the ruling per se, but he has a really big problem with the rhetoric of Donald Trump and some of his advisors, both during the campaign and during the transition. So even though there's no problem with the letter of the law, it satisfies all the requirements that you might need, because Donald Trump had previously said things about wanting to limit Muslim immigration until such time as we got things figured out, he decides that the executive order itself is not to be allowed to be implemented. And just to give you an idea of why that's just so dangerous, you know, if there is a lack of clarity in a piece of legislation or in a law, you can look at intent or discussions at the time, or courts tend to think that. But there isn't any lack of clarity about this law, and so just it should be judged on the letter of the law. But there was this time when Obamacare was before the Supreme Court, and there was a question about whether that individual mandate, the penalty that people would pay if they didn't buy health insurance, whether that was considered a tax or not. The entire way the Supreme Court saved that was by determining that the mandate was a tax, even though President Obama had repeatedly said it was not a tax. So if they had killed Obamacare by taking him at his word, you know, I don't think people would have been that pleased that they didn't just go with the actual law at hand. And there are all sorts of things. Even, you know, President Obama said, if you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. Nobody struck down the law on account of the fact that that was different than what actually took place in the legislation that he actually signed. So when you're evaluating legislation or executive orders, you should go with the letter of the law, not with what you interpret or what you feel might have been the feeling of the person. You know, it's just, it's a very bad way to not be a nation of law and order.
Well, you say that it makes the ruling essentially a commentary on Trump.
Right. So there are, again, you know, there are ways of understanding whether a piece of legislation or an executive order was passed with a certain goal in mind or whatnot. But they actually changed this executive order to reflect or respond to some of the criticisms they'd received. And yet none of that matters because of this judge's feeling that Donald Trump just basically is irredeemable. And so anything he said must be held against any immigration policy that he has that affects any majority Muslim country. And that's, you know, that's another big problem is if you can't have any restriction on any country with a majority religion, what you're basically saying is that the courts can tell a country that they can't have any immigration laws at all, because almost every country has a majority religion. I mean, literally almost every country. And the idea that you can't restrict immigration from a given country without violating the First Amendment, something that protects people within this country, not people in other countries, I mean, that just is, again, a very lawless approach and really gets at the heart of whether a country has the right to determine who's within its borders and under what conditions.
Now, even then, kind of the source material that the judge used to make this decision about how Trump and his advisors felt during the campaign, he kind of cherry-picked some of it, didn't he?
Well, you know, and it is this thing. If you're going to make an entire ruling based on what Trump or his advisors said, I think you have to really make a good faith effort to accurately convey what was said. And in these rulings that we've seen from judges, they quote Rudy Giuliani saying that he was contacted by Trump, who said something like, you know how I wanted to do that Muslim ban? Well, can you put a commission together? Show me the right way to do it legally. And some people are saying, see, it's just a backdoor approach to a ban on Muslims. Well, I mean, kind of, but not really. I mean, he goes on to explain that he put together a commission featuring the judge and former Attorney General Michael Mukasey, the chairman of the Homeland Security Company, Michael McCall, and other expert lawyers, and that they decided not to focus on religion and instead on danger, which is a factual basis, not a religious basis. Perfectly legal, perfectly sensible, he says. Again, the ban was not based on religion. So if you're going to quote him in an effort to portray it as a ban based on religion, the fact that he repeatedly says it's not a ban based on religion or that it's a ban based on danger or areas of concern supports the administration's contention that they care about security rather than a blanket ban on a religion.
There's also the problem of what you call unforced errors. What do you mean?
Well, so one of the things that was favorably cited in the Hawaii ruling was the plaintiff's claim that Trump had falsely said that if you were a Christian in Syria, it was impossible or at least very tough to get in the United States. This is just put in her ruling without any pushback. And in fact, it's not false at all. I mean, last year, the Obama administration had hit its goal of admitting 10,000 Syrian refugees, and only a tiny, tiny fraction of a percent were Christians. And that literally like 10,801 refugees from Syria, 56 were Christian. And that's despite the fact that the refugee population not only has 10% Christians, but that Christians are particularly persecuted by ISIS, along with Yazidis, who also didn't have very much success in gaining entry to the United States. You know, we have determined that there's been a genocide against these Christians and Yazidis that is, you know, just horrific. And so if we really do care about helping out refugees who are the hardest hit, we should be prioritizing those people. The first executive order did prioritize persecuted religious minorities. They actually, unfortunately, took that out in the second order.
We have touched upon this, but But explain in some detail what you perceive as a pretty profound confusion about the Establishment Clause.
Well, you know, the main thing is the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, that government should not restrict religious freedom or establish a particular religion. Generally speaking, religious liberty issues do not play into how we determine the legality of immigration policy. And that's for a pretty obvious reason, which is First Amendment has tended to be seen as something that protects people who are either citizens of this country or residing in this country, not people who want to make a claim to become citizens of the country. And so throughout our history, we have had either favorability or restrictions on people based on religion. And that's, in large part because religious persecution is something that has been a main reason why people want to come to the United States from our very founding. So we do prefer religion. We couldn't do that if you applied these establishment claims in the way that this judge wants to do it. And he says that he used the three-part Lemon test, which is a religious liberty test to determine whether whether a law violates religious liberty. And the first one is that the question is, does the law primarily have a secular purpose? Now, this executive order doesn't mention religion. Now that they took out the preference for the Christians and Yazidis, it doesn't mention religion at all. And the stated purpose in the executive order is for national security. But this judge decided not only that that wasn't true, that it had a primary religious purpose, but that there was no question about whether courts would determine that it had primarily had a religious purpose. This is just, I think, a very big stretch, and is this reason why this order will not be sustained, in my view. You know, it would upset a whole lot of precedent on immigration law in a way that people, I don't think, are prepared for or would particularly welcome, not to mention the question of whether courts can, you know, just because they basically disagree with a policy, whether that means that they can overturn it. You know, there are just so many legal issues in play and bad precedents set by this type of action.
You also say this is just kind of a classic example of judicial overreach.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it is very frustrating when someone is president or someone's in a position of authority and they do something that you don't agree with. And I understand that. I mean, that's true. Everyone should know that either because they spent 8 years under Barack Obama or because they're now under a Trump presidency. You know, you're going to have an executive who disagrees with you. And the way to handle that is not to have, you know, unaccountable judges overturning a policy preference. The way you handle policy preferences is through the electoral process. If you don't like it, you can change it, you know, with the next president that you elect. When you have the courts coming in and taking over and, again, running roughshod over the will of the people, that's a very dangerous precedent and very bad for self-government, and it should be guarded against strongly.
We spoke recently to Wesley Smith. He was talking about, he was reviewing Neil Gorsuch books that he did about 10 years ago. And one of the things he admired the most, Wesley admired about Gorsuch's judicial philosophy was, I think Gorsuch said, and I paraphrase, if a judge has never ruled against his own personal policy preferences, he's probably not a good judge. What do you make of that?
This is a great line and so true. You get the feeling with so many of these judges that they have the outcome they want, and then they just move and maneuver and manipulate until they get to the outcome they want. That is very different than having a blind justice system where you have maybe a particular personal difference, you know, a personal view that is at odds with the case before you, but you just bring down the law and you execute it blindly. This is a great example. I'm sure that people have many good reasons for opposing this executive order, but it wasn't lawless. It was done properly, and you have to accept the results, even if you personally wish that, you know, Hillary Clinton had been elected and was letting in every refugee from all over the world. That's understandable, but you can't violate our rule of law just because you have a particular policy preference.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is senior editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled Five Problems with a Hawaii Judge Halting Trump's Travel Ban. You can follow Molly on Twitter. Molly's Twitter handle, @MZHemingway, @MZHemingway, and read her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Molly, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, part 8 of our series with him on Lutheran identity. We're going to deal with two big, very different aspects of Lutheran identity. The first one, theological, that is the distinction between saint and sinner, and that the Christian is simultaneously both. and a feature of Lutheran Identity that you see every Sunday, congregational singing. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is next. Law and Gospel, the Reformation solas, the theology of the cross, the means of grace, simultaneously saint and sinner. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity. It's written by regular guest Dr. Al Schmidt. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity is published by Concordia Publishing House. 1-800-325-3040, or read an excerpt at issuesetc.org. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Dr. Anthony Eslin will be speaking on the topic of imagination and education at the second annual Wittenberg Academy Family Retreat, which will be held at Camp Okoboji in Milford, Iowa on April 27th through the 29th, 2017. Join us and be immersed in God's Word, thoughtful discussions, and family fun. For more information or to register, visit www.wittenbergacademy.org and click on the registration tab.
Now, only our listeners can cancel us. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Philip Hauser with Lamb of God Lutheran Church in Papillion, Nebraska. We're faithful to the Lutheran confessions as recorded in the Book of Concord, and our services are traditional Eucharistic liturgies in accordance with the ancient texts Saturday evening and Sunday morning. If you're ever in Omaha, come visit us. We're on Lincoln Street between 84th and 96th in Papillion. Our website is lambofgodlcms.org.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.